The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
If the Statue of Liberty had a voice, Americans think she would sound like this. A few years ago, I met with two amazing men, the Stewart brothers. They're a composer and conductor of an incredible choir, the Millennial Choir and Orchestra. And I said, let's give the Statue of Liberty the voice, but let's correct it. Because everybody thinks that the Statue of Liberty is a mother, a nurse that is inviting, give us the worst of the worst. And that's not what that poem means. I asked them, I said, can you write something that gives this heart but then corrects the legend and gives the correct voice to the Statue of Liberty? The Statue of Liberty is not, we're not a hospital. And that golden door is not the golden door to a hospital. The Statue of Liberty is a shield saying, we don't want your storied pomp. We don't want your lords and ladies and your knights and all of the crap, the lions on your flag, because it's all crap. We don't want any of that. That oppresses people. That keeps people down. Now, this is coming written at a time when we had no national anthem. We didn't even have a standardized flag until Woodrow Wilson, and no national anthem until FDR. We had no storied pomp at all. We were a collection of people who believed in something. That's the message. The real poem says, not like the brazen giant of Greek fame with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is imprisoned lightning, and her name is Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep your ancient lands and your storied pomp, she cries with silent lips. You give me the ones that you say can't make it, who try and try and try, and you continue to push down in the mud, that all these people are asking for is a chance to change their lives. Give those people to me. I will stand as a shield to protect them against people like you, so they have a chance to not just survive, but to thrive.
Thank you.
Statue of Liberty is not saying, give me those that you can no longer keep on insurance. The tired, the worn out, the broken. The ones that won't work. The ones that are just sponging off your system. That's not what the Statue of Liberty is saying. The Statue of Liberty is saying, give me the tired. What are they tired of? Tired of being pushed down in the mud. Tired of being told by some lord or lady, you work for me. That's now my idea. They're poor because you wouldn't give them the opportunity. Ask any European today, they will tell you, unless you are connected, unless your family has a name, you don't change your status. If you're poor, you're always poor. If you're homeless, you're never going to be the president. You'll never make it to king. You'll never make it to prime minister. Who was your family? Your dad was poor. Your dad was a drunk and homeless. You'll never amount to anything. Stay in your station. But wait, I can do it. I'm the better man. I'm the better woman. I work harder than anybody else. I know more than that person over there. I've built a better mousetrap. Yes, you have. And because you've built it, and you've built it as my serf, it now belongs to me. The Statue of Liberty. That poem, it never, never meant send me the worst of the worst, and they're going to stay the worst of the worst. I'm just going to protect them. That was a challenge. You keep all your ridiculous lion flags and your ridiculous edifices of great power. We're a simple country. We don't have any of that stuff. We're just a collection of people that every country said they'll never make it. They're worthless. They're farmers. What, we're the greatest army and navy in the world. They're farmers. Go kill them. Our first president was a farmer and just wanted to be a farmer. Always wanted to just farm. That's all he wanted to do. He became president. And where did he go? He didn't become a lord or a lady. He went back to being a farmer. And no greater than anybody else alive at the time. President was an insult. They laughed when he said, "You should call me president." That should be the title. President? That was like shopkeep. It was like manager. That was an insult to somebody who had power over in Europe. I'm so sick. I am so sick of the playground and the graveyard. Playground fights. I'm so sick of the press. I'm sick of Congress. I'm sick of the White House. You know, I have spent most of my life as a joke. So I come to you from a position of authority. I know jokes when I see them. And Congress and the press and the administration, they're a joke. If you didn't pay attention to the news yesterday, you think this is one weird-ass way for starting this show today. But there was an argument between Acosta, a reporter from CNN, and, I don't know, the next Trump spokesperson of the day at the White House press briefing. Now, I want you to understand up front, I agreed with him. Acosta, do I need to explain what your job is? You're a reporter. You're a reporter. That means you report on what happens, not argue, not lecture. You report. You can ask questions, but that's not what you were doing. You weren't asking questions yesterday. You were making a point. You were lecturing. You were using histrionics. You don't even know the truth behind the Statue of Liberty. Hey, Acosta, can you tell me why the French boxed that baby up and pretty much dumped it into a park in New York City? And by the way, here's some instructions on how to assemble it. Some assembly, in fact, a lot of assembly is required. All of the instructions, and I mean this literally, all of the instructions are in French. We didn't even take the time to put them in English for you. Jim Acosta, can you tell me why? Can you tell me what the Statue of Liberty was even meant for? Because it really wasn't meant for us. Now, see, you don't really care about history. Because all you were trying to do was win. And I understand. I mean, that's what you've all been trained to do. That's what you think reporting and journalism is now. You win. And I really had zero time for Stephen Miller at the White House, even though any other time in my life, I would have been, yeah, look at Stephen Miller go. He's right. He's right. He's right. I had no time for him last night. I get home. I'm trying to spend time with my kids. My son's going to get, you know, his swimming certificate for, you know, for Boy Scouts. I've got a million things going on, and I turn that on? Why? Why? And you expect me, Stephen Miller, to give you credit standing behind a podium where, yeah, I don't know, is it possible that 30 seconds before this discussion, you were defending the indefensible? You were so distorting the truth and defending absolute bald-faced lies? Yeah, it's not only possible, it's probable. And if it wasn't you, it certainly was somebody an hour before you. How does this help America? They weren't discussing the concept of the melting pot. You know, maybe we should all have a quick refresher on how Americans are not sending us all of their rapists. And then right after that, a real quick quiz on all of the illegals who are rapists, drunks, and killers, and thieves. Those guys that shouldn't be arrested 20 times just to be let out again so they can finally rape an old woman after they steal her car, or just go down on a beautiful afternoon and shoot an innocent woman on a San Francisco dock. Then maybe after we talk about those two things, maybe we could take a break, have a little lunch, and then pick up some big boy talk concerning the ridiculous idea that we're actually helping immigrants by not ensuring that they speak English. Of course, that is going to require you to have an honest conversation regarding history on why it was illegal to teach a slave how to read. Gee, by the way, that's not an American thing. That law was first enforced in ancient times, including countries that were not made up of white Europeans. It's crazy and shocking. Yes, I know. But I will give you this. Perhaps the ancients learned about that law from the Americans that arrived via the Stargate. I'm not sure. James Spader may have taught them that. How many people in our own country today are being abused, as well as in other non-European countries, by people of all colors and creeds because they don't speak the language? This happens all over the world, and it has happened. It is as old as time itself. How many dirtbags are ruling over those poor, huddled masses? because those poor huddled masses don't speak English. Save your speeches, both of you clowns. Save your speeches for the people that died in the back of that semi-truck in San Antonio. You know what? And they give the same speech to those who live in the shadows and who are afraid of calling the police when they've been raped or beaten or robbed. Talk to me about the Statue of Liberty then, will you? Who's ruling over those people? Somebody is. It's got to be just the Democrats, right? Because all the Democrats are good. I mean, they're all the great. Oh, no, wait, no, no, sorry. No, all the heroes are really all Republicans. Yeah, neither of those are true. And we as Americans need to say to these clowns, shut up, stop it. Because I know the horror caused by the twisted thinking on the left on this issue, I ain't buying it. But I also know the horrors of a place which is a no-go zone here in America called the Colonias. Most Americans have never heard of the Colonias. This is an area here in America just over the border, a no-go zone where it just kind of falls into the shadow, where giant corporations are allowed to use and abuse these people and trap them in what is nothing more than modern-day slavery because those companies have given payoffs to the GOP. So neither of you have much to say that I really want to listen to you, because you're just both using the situation. You're exploiting the people and situation for their own power and money. People in Congress, people in the heads of the parties, people in the administration, quite honestly, the last two, you're grotesque and you're sickening. You should be ashamed of yourself. You want to have a real conversation? Let's have a real conversation. But can we have that? Because right now there are people listening who, oh, see, Glenn Beck just hates Donald Trump. And those people who are just listening who are now saying, see, Glenn Beck's always been a GOP stooge. He'll stand up for anything. And of course, the ones I really like, the people who have just tuned in, heard maybe one sentence, and now are currently tweeting or posting somewhere their valid and vapid opinion to the whole world, even though they have absolutely no idea what I'm even talking about. Maybe it's an audience of one, me, but if you're sick of this and you want to fix the problem, good. Let's begin there after this break. Your windows have more of an impact on your home's look than you think. If your blinds are crooked, they're busted, they're old, it's time for new ones. And Blinds.com will help you solve the problem. What I like about Blinds.com is they have made their system really, really easy, and they've cut out all of the, you know, I remember going and buying blinds years ago, going to Home Depot, and then having to find the guy with the right apron who could help. And that guy in the apron also, you know, was doing wallpaper and something else. Blinds.com has made this so easy for you and taken the responsibility on their shoulders. If you accidentally mismeasure or you pick the wrong color, they're going to remake your blinds for free. That's after they've sent you the free color samples just to make sure that everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. Now through the 21st of this month, get huge site-wide savings plus an additional 5% off with the promo code Beck. Do it now. Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
By the way, that song that we started with from the Millennial Choir and Orchestra, it's off the CD, To Be an American. It's something that I told them stories, and then they went and wrote this music. It is phenomenal piece of work.
Available on iTunes.
Yeah, get it. It's To Be an American is the collection. That particular piece was called The Great Colossus. You can find it on iTunes. The Millennial Choir and Orchestra, back in just a moment.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, watching this, quite honestly, this little, you know, clown show or little circus called the White House press briefing yesterday. I watched the clip and I actually sided with the guy from the White House. But all I could think of the whole time was, who's watching this? Who's watching this? Only the people who are cheering for Jim Acosta, who was not doing anything like a reporter. He was trying to win. That's it. And who's watching the press briefings at this point? Really, only those who want to cheer for the Trump administration because it's so discredited itself in this press briefing. I mean, honestly, watching the news, you'll get a better sense of reality from an episode of The Kardashians than you will at a White House press briefing or the news. Because at least in The Kardashians, at least everyone involved, you know, is honest enough to admit, yeah, I'm pretty much a money and power whore. And there's nothing noble about anything we're doing. So, hey, watch some more. Want to buy some stuff? Look at me. I'm going to show you my boobs soon. I mean, at least they're honest about it. No one's watching the news or the briefings anymore because both sides are a disgrace.
I sure didn't want to see Jim Acosta's boobs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I had no desire.
Why?
Just wasn't in the mood.
I mean, ask yourself this. How is this helping our country? How is it healing? How is it solving anyone who's actually struggling? Do you really think, I'm speaking to everyone in the press room, everybody in Washington, D.C. that is involved in politics, do you really think that what you're doing is the work of the average American? The average American that is worried about their job, about making the next car payment? Or, God forbid, you know, worrying about having to, you know, think about how do I afford the insurance premium and deductible that I can no longer afford because of people just like you, because of the press and the politicians, the Democrats and the press. Can I ask you a question? Where is the doctor that I was promised I could once keep? Where is the plan that I had, that I loved, that I was promised I could keep? Where is my $2,500 a year in savings? Where is that? Republicans and the GOP press, the ones that'll just spin everything in your direction. Where's the repeal that the Republicans raised money on, campaigned on, had me argue back and forth with friends, had me draw a line in the sand? You've got to stand up because this is right. Otherwise, they'll never repeal it. Where is the repeal? Where's your frickin' replacement that none of us even wanted? Where is it? And don't even answer. Please don't answer, because I've already heard what both of you have to say. One in a left box, one in a right box, some clown in the middle, and you're arguing. And all I do is I wonder, I see that for 10 seconds and wonder, does anybody here realize that they're all making the opposite point that they were making when their clown was the lead of the circus? The filth, the pettiness, the hatred, the, quite frankly, dishonest stupidity that you all have been feeding to your flock every day. How is that helping anyone except you? I know how it helps CNN. CNN rallies their base and they get people who watch CNN, which I don't know if you've seen that lately, but not a lot of people watching CNN. It gets people who watch CNN really excited and, oh, finally, somebody's saying it to this person. Right. Let me ask you, how does this end? Jim Acosta, let's say you win and everybody and all the circle of your friends who has your point of view, they win every election for the next 20 years. What happens? What do you do to the 45% of people that don't agree with you or never will agree with you. Do we have to silence all those people who have a different opinion? Do we jail them? I mean, it's not, you know, hyperbolic to ask you that. People are suggesting it on your side now. If you don't agree with solutions on man-made global warming or cooling or chaos, I can't remember which popular now, you want to jail them. You're already running people out of their positions at work if they don't agree with you. The IRS targeted and tried to silence those in the Tea Party. By the way, congratulations to the Tea Party groups that have just in the last 2 weeks gotten their 501c3, their approval from the IRS. Congratulations. Now you can go get them. Now, for anybody who is listening who's on the right, don't get on your high GOP horse. Because 45% of those who claim they're conservatives now believe that a judge should have the power to silence a media organization or a media person that is, quote, too biased. Huh. Where is your beloved Constitution now? And everybody on the right, don't preach to me about the Second Amendment if you don't even understand the significance of the first. Because if you want a judge to tell me who's biased, who can have a job, and who can't have a job, the Second Amendment is there to protect me from people like you when you have power. I mean, we could do this all day. We could go left and right. Oh, Glenn Beck. Yeah, look, he's taking on the GOP. Oh, finally, maybe he's changed. He's taken on the GOP because of them wanting to silence the press. Oh, shut up. Like you have, really? Tell me about that grand understanding that you have on the First Amendment when it comes to faith. Both sides, you are both certifiable. Fascist or communist? I don't think so. Vast majority? No. Those people do exist on both sides. There are fascists and there are communists. But that's not the majority of people who are cheering for either side. Most people are ignoring their own wild inconsistencies because they're tired and they now have been convinced that the most important thing to do is to win. Rage and winning at any cost has driven us to the brink of the abyss. The righteous didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everyone else. I personally think I'm speaking to a growing segment of the country, but I don't care. I have decided long ago that if it's just me and a couple of people under a tree someplace else, I'll continue to say the same thing. Anybody who can still see sanity from here, stop. Tell everybody you know, stop. Don't go a step further. The world has gone mad. And we're following along because we don't know what else to do. There is no leadership anywhere. So let's lead. Here's what you do. First, you think. You think. Don't try to win. Think. Question both sides. But really question with boldness your side. And then admit when your side is wrong or your side is lying. Take the mote out of your own eye. And then stand up with unwavering conviction in the defense of all things that make us human in the first place. If you're not human, how can you possibly be a defender for human rights? Stop twisting history to make your point sound American. I'm more American than you. Well, I've got a bigger Statue of Liberty than you do. Oh, yeah, well, you should see mine in my backyard, and I've got the flag, too. Stop claiming symbols for your use. First of all, they belong to all of us and none of us. They're wildly important and at the same time absolutely worthless. What happened to the country that up until 1918, we didn't have a standardized flag? Now, God forbid you let the flag even touch the ground. You better slap that Boy Scout around. We didn't even have a standardized flag until the progressive movement in Woodrow Wilson. You could make your own flag and arrange the stars any way you wanted. And by the way, when we hoisted that flag up, we didn't even have a national anthem until the next huge progressive of FDR. We didn't have a national anthem? No. No, because it was the idea of America that was sacred. The symbols didn't exist. The symbols are meaningless. It's what you do with the idea. The Statue of Liberty was a marketing gimmick by the French, for the French, to stop the rise of radicalism and communism. To show, hey guys, before we do that and kill each other, you know, there is another idea. And what did we do? We've taken that stupid Statue of Liberty and we've made it into our own storied pomp. It goes against everything the poem holds up as a beacon. That poem is an excoriation of Europe. We need to stop acting like sheep because our shepherds are leading us all over a cliff. If you actually care more about winning or proving the other side wrong, if that's what you really care about, then we can't have an actual conversation on what people really believe. The people who don't hate immigrants or the people who don't think all white people are evil. Those people, those opinions are actually important. Can we have an adult conversation here for a while? Can I tell you my own personal experience with people who used to work for me? They were the best of our company. And they've just gone home. They've worked here from Mexico because she was left by her husband years ago with four children. And her husband left her for a 15-year-old girl. She had no way to improve the lives of those children. She actually gave her children to her sister. Take care of my children. I'm going to go to America and work, and I will send every dollar back so my children cannot have the life that I have. She met a wonderful man here in America. They got married. When I bought the studios here, they had worked here for 14 years. They had worked here and were paid an obscene amount of money. Not in obscene like, oh my gosh, look how much they're being paid. They're rich. They worked from dawn until dusk, and they didn't speak a word of English and were told all kinds of lies. Her husband worked here for free, so she didn't work herself to death. Kept in the shadows. I not only hired her husband, I paid her. I gave her a raise on the first day. I quadrupled her salary. And then the first thing I did after that was gave her classes in English. We sent them to school. Why? Because if you can't speak English, you are at the mercy of every dirtbag that will exploit you. We have to see the real suffering in America. We have to see the real suffering of the people who are just trying to make ends meet. And that is those who have come here from some other place or want to come here from some other place, and those people who have lived here their whole lives and aren't making it. And nothing in Washington is going to, they're not listening to those people. They're not listening to you. Grow up, Washington. How sad is it that you've just had a recovering joke tell you to grow up? That's how screwed up this country is. Now this, every summer the Justice Department sees a spike in home burglaries. You're on vacation, thieves are taking advantage of your empty home. This is why Simply Safe Home Security's extended their biggest ever summer sale until August 13. It is a whopping $100 off the Simply Safe summer package. Now, this is like $399 and it has everything. This is what I have in my home. Has everything you need. Glass break, window sensors, all of this stuff. And you get $100 off it. Plus the round-the-clock monitoring, no contract, $15 a month. Protection done right. Don't miss this. Its sale ends August 13th. That's what, 10 days away? SimplySafeBeck.com. Save $100 today. Go there now. SimplySafeBeck.com. Save $100.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, so there was one story that was one story. It took 55 minutes to get to one story today. We got a couple of others that we really want to talk about. If I have time today, I really want to get to the Dietrich Bonhoeffer on stupidity. It's fantastic.
Can we also do today the new TV hack that millennials have discovered? They've been able to get TV for free. It's called an antenna. It's incredible. They just discovered it.
Wow. Interesting.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Okay, so remember last time Al Gore came out with an Inconvenient Truth and got an Oscar, and he was the hero of the planet because, you know, we have to reduce our carbon footprint. People looked at his house, and it turned out Glenn Beck's house was far greener than Al Gore's house. And so then he spent, I think it was about $250,000 to make sure that his house was green, and he would offset, you know, his carbon footprint. Unfortunately, in last September, he devoured 30,993 kilowatt hours of electricity. That is enough to power 34 average American homes for a month. And over the last 12 months, Al Gore used more electricity just heating his outdoor swimming pool than six typical homes use in a year. You lying fraud. I can't wait to get to that story. Because if you really want to change the world, if you really actually care and you want to do your part, you can actually do that. I've done it. And it's great. It's really, really great. It's tough, but it's worth it. Makes you self-reliant. And it helps the planet. We'll get into that coming up. Also, I can't wait to read something I saw last night, On Stupidity by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It explains a lot of what's going on in the world. Also, an update. John Whitehead is going to join us, president of the Rutherford Institute. An update on an amazing girl that we have been telling you about all week. A girl in Oregon that has lost custody of her children because of her IQ being 72. And she is caught in a horrible trap. John Whitehead is joining us because this is not as rare as you think it is. And we've got to stop this slide into a world where the government has control, absolute control, over your life and your children. We go there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We've been telling you all this week about Amy Fabrini, who have had her children taken from her and Eric Ziegler, the father, saying that the couple is too mentally limited to be considered good parents. Now, he is more limited than she is. He has an IQ of 68, but apparently has far more limitations than she does. But she has, both of them have taken every class the state has required. The state has gone in. There is no sign of neglect, no sign of abuse. Their house is clean. They've had visits every month for 14 straight months. The woman who was working for the state, who had a 20-year career, said there's nothing here. She was fired by the state. They're now trying to terminate those parental rights. And every time that they get any kind of press coverage, the state screws with them. Because she was on our program this week, she's had a hard time with visitation this week. The state's got some problems. She lost 6 hours with her kids for her, 10-minute conversation with me on Monday. That's her only 6 hours with her kids. This is outrageous. And if the state of Oregon thinks we're going to stop, we're not. John Whitehead is the president of the Rutherford Institute. It's a watchdog group for individual freedom in America, a nonprofit organization built around defending individual liberties and human rights. John, I don't know how much you know about Amy Fabrini, and we've been really digging into it for the last couple of days and taking our time. It seems like it is all checking out to be exactly what we think. And this is a horror show to happen in America.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is something, Glenn, you know, like I say, I've been in this area 40 years. I've had a number of cases against the CPS social work agencies. One we actually had years ago where a neighbor called CPS and said the kids had bad breath, repeatedly had bad breath. And the CPS and police actually investigated that case. So it's gotten to the point where the state is actually, in my opinion, saying they are the parent, and somehow we out there who have children are their auxiliaries or whatever. And if we don't do just what they want, they can take the kids. And unfortunately, many of the courts have upheld it. You know, several years ago in a case that we helped work on, social workers and police came into a public school and investigated, sat with a child and talked to the child, got all kinds of information, never even invited the parent in. And I thought that was a key parental rights issue. And the court ruled that the state can do that now. They can talk to your kids privately. So what I'm telling parents across the country is, when you say the wrong word now, if your kid goes to school and says it to a teacher, you can get investigated, because there is this idea now that somehow the government, the state, the schools, or the social workers out there, they are the parents. And we are out there just to basically do as they say. And again, they can be politically incorrect all they want. They can do all these things. But if you say the wrong word, and as you know, Glenn, with this society today, if you say the wrong word about any kind of subject that someone doesn't like,
I know,
that may be evidence of unfitness. But this is nuts. I mean, someone who is supposedly has a low IQ. I mean, I've run into a lot of people who are brilliant who didn't do well on the IQ test.
I know a lot of people who are brilliant that, you know, would make horrible parents. Horrible parents.
Yeah. But you don't hear they're saying basically these foster parents will be better financially able to care for a kid. I grew up in a poor home, and I learned so many valuable lessons from that poor home. It's not money that makes people. It's not money. It's parents who care, who love you. And I think that's the point we're missing. They're coming up with these ideas that it isn't love that makes a good parent. It's this thing. And as one of the mediators said, who's investigated this case, is that there are no objective guidelines for any of this stuff.
No,
there's some government agent making up something.
Yeah, the woman who was working for the state, Shireen Hagenbach. She's been doing this for 20 years. When she said there's no abuse, there's no sign of any trouble, it's a clean house, a loving house, yada, yada, yada. She was fired by the state. She feels so compelled. She's now the advocate and mentor. She's been, you know, helping them because this couple is completely alone. And when you listen to Amy, the mom, she's capable of raising her children, and now having to stand up in front of some sort of panel that, her advocate Shireen has said, the state isn't presenting the evidence against, because they say we don't have to because of the privacy of the children. How can you possibly defend against that?
You can't, and they don't have any evidence, is what I'm saying. We see it in the cases. Like I say, that we've handled hundreds of cases across the years of these things. Reporting a neighbor reporting a kid for bad breath and they get investigated. That shows you that we've allowed our government, and you were saying it earlier on in your introduction, we've allowed the government basically to set the rules. We the people need to start setting the rules. We the parents need to start setting the rules. And, you know, should your kid be investigated by a social worker on school property and they don't even tell you that? Come on. You know, the old phrase, in loco parentis, means that the state, the government, is there to serve us. They're not there to serve themselves. But what most people don't realize, too, and I was surprised when I learned this a couple of years ago, a lot of the CPS agencies, social work agencies, get grants for placing kids in foster homes. So it becomes a monetary incentive for some agencies.
Oh, my gosh. So, John, what can we do? What can we do as people to help this couple? I mean, it wasn't until people like you got involved with Justine Pelletier that actually turned around. That did really have a happy ending, but it kind of did. At least they got their kids back or their child back.
What you can do is, I think these parents are doing it right. They're getting the right news out there that they're getting. What they need is local help, though. I think, you know, people, if you want to change your government, I'm telling people, Washington doesn't listen very well. But local agencies do. Getting involved in your local government, getting down to your city council, getting some rules for CPS, some objective guidelines. We shouldn't be allowing these people to just make up what they want to do. You know, saying that your IQ is not high enough. My dad had a fifth grade education. I remember people asking me, how could you grow up in a family? Because he was smarter than I was. He grew up in a poor family. Don't give us objective guidelines, and your city councils can do that. They can put some control on these people.
She lives in a small town. This is what her advocate says. Her advocate says, you know, my dad's a judge. My mom is something else. They're like, this is a very small town. All the attorneys just know each other, and they're just cutting deals, and they're not defending. Yeah. They're not defending Amy and her children. And every time she speaks out, it's a small town. She was on this program. She lost her visitation rights this week. And of course, it had nothing to do with that, with her appearance here. Although this always seems to happen on the weeks that she gets any kind of press against the Department of Children and Families.
Well, this should wake people up to the fact that you have a government that, and we know that, does whatever it wants to do. Do we really want that? And, you know, this idea of all the snitches and people telling on each other and reporting each other, which was most of what happens, our family members in this case, reporting kids' parents to the CPS workers or other government agencies. Listen, that's how Hitler took control. It was people telling other people, reporting people were listening to the wrong network or taking their kid to a place where they shouldn't take them, and they were reporting that they got in trouble. Let's stop working for the government and start working for each other and preserve freedom in this country. Otherwise, these cases are going to continue. You know, again, we fight them, and we're actually going to look into this and see what kind of help we can provide. Okay,
please do. Thank you, John. John Whitehead from RutherfordInstitute.org. These are white hat guys that are Yeah, you may not like, you know, when people defend the rights of others that you disagree with, but human rights are human rights. We have to defend all of them. And John has been in this battle for a very long time, RutherfordInstitute.org.
You know, the great Martin Luther King quote, he said, listen, we may all have arrived in different boats, but we're all in the same boat now. And I'm telling you, when I'm looking at this country today, we're either going to sink together or we're going to float together, folks. So Let's float together, okay?
John, thanks very much. I appreciate it. And if you will let us know anything you find out on this case or anything we can do to get you more information, appreciate it. John Whitehead.
All right, thank you, sir.
You bet. Rutherford Institute. What they really need is some great, great legal counsel from the outside. Who will take this on? I will, you know, if you're qualified and really the one, I will make sure people know who your law firm is. You have experience in this and you know what you're doing. Please contact this family. What's their website? What's their website? Do you know?
If you go to glenbeck.com, that's where you can find all
the information.
Different places to get them and also to donate and help their cause.
Yeah.
Glenbeck.com.
So yesterday, we haven't mentioned this yet, but yesterday, they're not getting really any press on this yet. It's really up to you to spread the word on this. And we really have until probably the end of September. The state is going to terminate their right to being parents. If she has another baby, what do we do? Do we just keep doing this? Or maybe we should sterilize Amy. Should we do that? That's probably what we should do, right? I mean, how many imbeciles is she going to have before we just sterilize her?
Isn't three generations enough?
Yeah, this is the road that progressives took us last time.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bad road. You don't just take people's children without real evidence. You give the benefit of the doubt to the parent. Don't tell me about an IQ. You don't measure your mother's love and her ability to help you grow into a decent human being by measuring her IQ. Yesterday, I think they had $300 at their GoFundMe. We didn't mention it, but people have been finding out about this, and I think they have $6,300 in it now. They need a lot more money than that. She needs a job. She works at a grocery store, and she lost her job at the grocery store. So, you know, now it's, oh, well, they don't have a job. My gosh. How many great people? Abraham Lincoln. You want to talk about a brutal, awful father? Abraham Lincoln. And just abandon him and Abraham Lincoln and his sister out in the middle of nowhere. Came back, you know, what, 6 or 8 months later with a new woman and said, this is your mom. I mean, Abraham Lincoln, horrible. Look what he turned into. I'm not suggesting that we put up with abuse, but there is no evidence of abuse here at all. We don't do this to each other. We don't let our government do this, because if you don't stand up for Amy, Amy's plight is your plight. If you don't stand up for Amy, you could be next. They need your support. You can go to glenbeck.com. You can find their GoFundMe page there. And if the only thing you can do is pray, then please pray, because this has got to stop. Back in just a second, I've got a couple of things for you. I have a new story. A guy who decided to sell rabbit ear antennas just a few years ago thought maybe he'd sell a few of them, you know, maybe a couple hundred a year after, you know, everybody went to cable and everything else. He decided to get into the antenna. He started selling them online. I believe he sold 75,000 last month. And who's he selling them to? Millennials, who are now worried that they're hacking broadcast television. The rumor is you can get television, local television, for free. Is this even legal? Yes, it is. It is. We'll give you that story coming up. Al Gore's home, and what a nightmare that is. And I want to spend a few minutes on the curious case of Amranaran. I can't even say it. Amranawan, the guy from Pakistan working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Nobody is explaining this story. I put a timeline together on the chalkboard that we shared on the Blaze TV yesterday. I want to go over it with you and just give you the timeline. Anybody who is saying what it means, they're lying to you. They don't know what it means. But I will tell you, there's no good explanation for what is happening with the Democrats and with this family from Pakistan. There's no good outcome, and nobody's covering it. It's complex, but you really need to know it. And I can't think we can break it down for you in 10 minutes so you have a good handle on who the players are and what they're accused of doing, what we know they are doing. And then we'll watch it from there. That's coming up in a second. First, let me tell you about LifeLock. Free Wi-Fi is hard to resist. It's free, but a recent report found that 92% of Americans put their personal information at risk while using public Wi-Fi. We depend on public Wi-Fi. It helps us stay connected. But unsecure Wi-Fi is easier than you think to hack into. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. Now, LifeLock detects a whole wide range of identity threats. They're not just looking at your credit report. Your credit report is what has happened to you in the last few months, not what is happening right now. If there's a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to be assigned to you, and they're going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but if you act now, you will get the added protection of Norton Security free for the first time when you bundle Norton and your LifeLock membership. So you're going to get Norton, which will protect you from hackers and everything else, best in the business. You'll get that free for a year when you bundle Norton and LifeLock together. And you're going to get a 15% discount off the first year for your LifeLock membership if you use my name promo code BECK15. That's BECK15. That's to save the 15%. So you get Norton Security for free for a year when you bundle it with LifeLock. And I'm going to give you an extra 15% off just by using the promo code BECK15. Go to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code BECK15 or 1-800-LIFELOCK. LifeLock.com, promo code BECK15.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
There's more coming out. You know, this argument about what, you know, President Trump said to the Mexican president, et cetera, et cetera. Now somebody has leaked the transcript of the actual conversation. Not only did what President Trump say happen didn't happen, but it's worse than that. Back in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, so we're just talking about Queen is coming to American Airlines Center in Dallas. Are they any
pretty good?
Good
gig for a band that's over 40 years old.
And the guy who was. I mean, I've not
and
seen.
And the lead singer's been dead for 25
yeah,
years.
Yeah, I mean, I have not seen.
Man.
I have not seen Queen because Freddie Mercury is dead. And to me, Freddie Mercury was.
Yeah.
He is Queen.
That's Queen.
Yeah, of course.
But is Adam Lambert still with him? And is he is good? Him. Does he sound
well,
like
good.
Freddie Mercury?
He sounds reasonably like Freddie Mercury.
I mean, it'd be a fun show.
I mean, nobody's Freddie Mercury, but he's pretty good. And I actually wanted to see them when Bad Company's lead singer, Paul Rodgers, was with them. That would have been cool, too. Although he doesn't sound like Freddie Mercury.
No, but he has a great voice.
One of the great rock vocalists of all time.
Okay, a couple of things. Let me just go through. First of all, Stu, can you give me an update on this? Because this is going to be the story of the day that everybody is talking about. Here's the big breaking news against Donald Trump that Donald Trump walked right into himself. He said, you know, the head of the Boy Scouts called me right after, said it was one of the greatest speeches they've ever had at their jamboree. The head of the Boy Scouts was on the phone apologizing to people for, you know, I'm sorry that the president got so, you know, political. That's when President Trump said, no, he called me. The Boy Scouts have said, no, he didn't. He did not call the president.
And then the White House confirmed
why
that.
Does he do this?
Yeah. And then the
why does he do it?
I know. So then the other thing that has been percolating is that The president had this big conversation with Mexico and they're going to pay for the wall. And I've had these personal conversations with him. He called me just the other day and said, blah, blah, blah. No, he didn't. Mexico said no. Okay, well, maybe it's Mexico saying that. Well, unfortunately, the White House, somebody has leaked the transcript of the actual phone conversation.
And well, the White House confirmed...
Was the Mexican president in his office begging like a dog to pay for the wall?
You know what? No, shockingly, no. Okay. He was not. They confirmed that... they later said that they were in-person conversations.
Yeah.
They weren't calls.
Uh-huh.
Both
of them.
Yes, on both of them. They have now released, however... And again, it's not a good thing, we should point out, to leak transcripts of presidential conversations.
They got
to
get this
with
under control.
Heads of state.
I mean, it really is.
Got to get it under control.
Big time.
Really bad. I mean,
how is it happening like this?
It's happening because somebody in the White House
doesn't like him.
No, and it's like this guy is out of control. I'm trying to alert the American people or the press, and I don't know his motives. His motives may be absolutely true and good. They also just might be political. We don't know.
Yeah, and
we don't know.
It wasn't Priebus, right?
We'll accept anything from WikiLeaks now, but you know, you didn't when their clown was the head of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
Now you'll accept anything from WikiLeaks and say, no, that's absolutely true, even though the source you question is Russia and everything else. This now, the White House, if they leak it, he's got to be a bad guy. You don't know that. We don't know who it is. We don't know if it's good or bad. Could be either. We know this. No one should be leaking private conversations between the president and another head of state.
Really bad.
But here's why it was leaked.
Here's the part on the wall with Mexico. Trump says, I have to have Mexico pay for the wall. I have to. I've been talking about it for a 2-year period. He then tried to get the Mexican president to suppress the issue. When pressed on who would pay for the wall, we should both say, we will work it out. It will work out on the formula somehow, as opposed to you saying we will not pay and me saying we will not pay. The president of Mexico resisted, saying that Trump's repeated threats had placed a very big mark on our back, Mr. President. He warned that my position has been and will continue to be very firm. Mexico cannot pay for the wall. Trump objected, but you cannot say that to the press. The press is going to go with that, and I cannot live with that. Searching for an exit, the Mexican president said, it's an issue related to the dignity of Mexico and goes to the national pride of our country. But I won't, he said, he will stop talking about the wall.
Where's the part where President Trump said it's not that big of an issue?
He said, hold on one second. Let me find that part again. It's right after that, but it's, I think a cutoff here. He said, believe it or not, this is Trump speaking. Believe it
There's
or not.
This is a quote. This is a transcript.
Believe it or not, this is, meaning the wall, this is the least important thing that we are talking about, but politically it might be the most important thing to talk about.
I mean, my gosh.
He did this he had a very tumultuous call with the Australian president as well. If you remember this one. Now, this was kind of, the same type of thing.
It was a phone call. It was a phone call. No, it wasn't. It was a conversation. First, it was a phone call. And then when the Australian president did the same as Mexico and the Boy Scouts. Oh, no, that was an in-person conversation. There was no transcript of that. It's my word against theirs.
Now, the Australian one, if you remember, details of them having an angry discussion were talked about at the time, and bits and pieces of the topics came out, but never the full transcript. Full transcript is out now. Washington Post has it. This is going to kill me, he said to the Australian president. Trump said, quote, I am the world's greatest person that does not want to let people into the country, and now I am agreeing to take 2,000 people. They disagreed on the number. It's actually was 1,250. He said, I hate taking these people. Trump said, I guarantee you they are bad. That's why they're in prison right now. They're not going to be wonderful people who go on to work for the local milk people.
What? Wait, what? How does he, first of all, how does he know they're not going to work for the local milk people?
They could work for
and
the
who
local
are the local
and
milk
who
people?
Who are the local milk people?
I don't know who the local milk people are, but anyway.
Also, here's the thing. He's not a politician. He doesn't know how to lie like a politician. Okay? So we need to cut him some slack. So
there's that.
The other thing was the Australian president tried to salvage the deal, noting that the detainees were economic refugees who had not been accused of crimes. I mean, again, this is like day eight.
Look,
so
he's
maybe
not a politician.
I don't know.
Okay? He doesn't know about the refugees.
So here's
maybe give him a break there.
So, let's just move on. I can't wait. I hope we don't run out of time today to tell you this great quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He wrote an essay or a letter in prison, and this one is entitled On Stupidity.
It'd be a good time to read it since we're talking about
stupidity.
Well,
I don't know. I've got another piece of stupidity. And then I have to tell you about the Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's at the top of next hour.
That's criminal activity, though.
And you need to know about that.
It's criminal activity.
You need to know about that. I think we found the beginning way of trying to explain this to you. It'll take 10 minutes, but you need to get your arms around the story. And nobody is explaining. I broke it out on a chalkboard yesterday. It's a preliminary chalkboard. We're going to continue to work it and refine it so you can have it and really understand it. But we'll do that at the top of next hour. Let's just, on stupidity, let's go here. An Inconvenient Truth came out with Al Gore. And when that happened, people started looking at his energy and his carbon footprint, his energy uses. And, of course, he consumed 230,889 kilowatt hours. This is at his Nashville residence.
Yeah, that's before he even had the Malibu residence.
Yeah. By the way, 230,889 kilowatt hours. So, you know, the average home uses 10,812 kilowatt hours of electricity.
So yeah, it was 20 times the average.
Yeah. Okay. So after he won in 2007... they found that he was using 20 times more electricity than the average household. So when that became public knowledge, he decided to change his way, and he was gonna give his whole place a green makeover. He added 33 solar panels that cost him $60,000. He upgraded the home windows and ductwork, replaced the insulation, put in driveway rainwater collection system, installed a geothermal heating system. And then he changed all the light bulbs to fluorescent light bulbs. Total renovations cost well over $250,000. Okay, here's what he has now. Now that, you know, he's got another movie out, let's check his carbon footprint in his second home, in the same home that he just did to make it green.
This is the Nashville home still,
yeah, this
right?
is his second home, his Nashville home. Or is Malibu his second home?
I think
home?
Malibu is his primary residence now.
Yeah, so Nashville is his second home.
Yeah.
So he's not really even living there. The 33 solar panels generate 12,000 kilowatt hours of electricity. That's a year. That's way more than the average typical household needs. But he is such an energy hog that... the rooftop solar array that he put there produces only 5.7% of the electricity that he uses. He also...
that's 21 days a year of energy.
Think about how inefficient that is for a $60,000 investment.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Okay, so he also... he also has a couple of other problems with his home. He is currently using 30,993 kilowatts hours of electricity. That's enough to power 34 average American homes for a month over the last 12 months.
Is this how you conduct your life? Seriously.
If you really believe this.
If you believe in catastrophic global warming.
No, you
it's
don't.
Quite clear he does.
No, you
he
don't.
Doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't believe it.
That's, by the way, Glenn, that over the last 12 months, Gore used more electricity just heating his outdoor swimming pool than six typical homes use in a year. Now, again, that is a
you don't even have a
luxury
a pool heater if you believe in catastrophic global warming.
Of course not.
You don't even have a pool if you believe that.
Of course not.
And you buy a smaller house. Now, look, you might not buy. Maybe you could give him a break and say he's not going to buy the smallest house. Yeah, he's not going to go to tiny
houses.
Nobody
expects him to do that. But unless you believe in catastrophic global warming.
And then, of course, you would. Then you would.
Okay.
By the way, now, to put this into perspective, I went to my energy bill this morning as we were looking at this. Now, I am a person who has never in their entire life made one decision about energy based on the environment.
Me neither.
Never. I've made decisions because of money. I've made decisions because of comfort. I have never once in my entire life made one decision based on the environment when it comes to energy.
Welcome, Stu.
Thank you. And I don't know. There's probably a lot of people in the audience who've made that same choice. But think about that, because I don't care. I do not believe that my energy choices are going to cause catastrophic global warming.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to note, I use 64% less energy per square foot in my home than Al Gore does. That's not, now, his home's bigger than mine, of course. Again, that makes no sense if he believes in catastrophic global warming. But, okay, you might think, well, yeah, he uses more energy than I do because his home is bigger. No, per square foot, I use 64% less energy than Al Gore, and I've never tried.
So here's the thing. He spent $250,000 redoing his home.
Retrofitting it.
Okay?
Yeah.
So at my ranch, I have a ranch home. It is, 2,000 square feet? It's,
I think it's a little more than that.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
But it's 3, not 000, a lot more than that. It's about three.
I know the top, that because it has a lot of bedrooms and the second floor, which is really underground, the first floor is, I think, 1,500 or 1,800 square feet. It's like that. And that's the part that we use as a family. And it's like that, you know, kind of
it's
the house
really
I grew
nice,
up
but
in.
But it's not gigantic.
And it's not opulent.
Right.
Okay. What we did is we spent our money in doing, for instance, my house was the first house that was wrapped in this copper sheathing for energy to and heat to trap energy.
And it works.
And it works so much so that last winter, when it was 10 below zero for like 2 weeks, my power went out. I had no power in my house. Now imagine 10 below zero.
Yeah. You would think it'd be really cool.
By lighting one of the fireplaces once a day, and just because we made doors that we have two doors, so you open one and the other door is closed, you close that one and then you open the other one so it's not blowing stuff in because it gets very cold in the winter. Just by doing that and lighting the fire with no electricity, my house, because of my insulation and everything else, stayed at 68 degrees for a week.
It's pretty amazing.
Why aren't you doing that?
Yeah.
Why aren't you doing that?
Yeah.
We're completely green. We're completely off the grid. We have solar and wind. Why aren't you doing that, Al? It can be done.
Because he doesn't. Such a phony. Such a fraud.
He doesn't believe it.
It's such a hoax.
And we should point out, on your Facebook page is the video that debunks the main claim he made in the trailer. If you go to Glenn Beck's Facebook page, it's back, I think, yesterday. It was posted, or the day before. Look for it, because that's about, in about 6 minutes, just blows apart his entire case that he, all of his stuff has been proven right.
Now this, the Dow Jones Industrial Average passed 22,000. That's a pretty big deal. Dow 22,000. That's an 11% surge for the year. Over the same period, the U.S. dollar has lost about 10% of its value against six major currency. So, financial might of the United States. There they are. One is the Dow. The other is the dollar. One is collapsing. The one is deflating 10%. The other one is at an all-time high. Which one is real? Just based on mathematics, on what you know, how systems work, which one is real? The dollar. That one's real. That losing 10% of its value, that's real. What you're seeing in the stock market is hyperinflation or borderline hyperinflation. Too many dollars chasing too few goods. They're pumping it all into the stock market. I want you to read President Reagan budget director David Stockman's report about the five threats to the economy. And I'm doing this because I want you to have, as a family, the same conversation my wife and I had last night. What's coming, honey? How do we prepare? Are we buttoned down? For as little as $2,500, you get 3 months of price protection all the way up to a year for $25,000 investment. Nobody's doing that. Call Goldline now, 866-465-3546. They're waiting for your call now, 866-465-3546, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
All right. There is a story that, honestly, I have tried to read this story. I save it. Every time I see a story on it, I save it. I got to read that later. And then I end up at the end of the week deleting it because that's been outdated. And now the story is, you know, a week older. So there's more information. I didn't understand it when it first started. Nobody's really explaining it. And now I'm so far behind on the story, I'm like, I don't even know if I should pay attention. I know what's happening with this group of people from Pakistan that were running IT for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats on Capitol Hill. I know this is really important, but I haven't been able to find a way to explain it or even understand it. I challenged my team, who, by the way, thank you to my GBTV team for what they're doing lately. The chalkboards that they are helping me put together are just phenomenal. I challenged them. I said, I don't understand this story. Tell me what this story is and why I should care at this point. So we put together the first chalkboard yesterday. It's a timeline. I want to take you through that timeline. And in 10 minutes, you should be able to really have a handle on this story that seems like it's probably really, really, really important. The curious case of Imran Awan. You say that three times fast. We'll do that right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. You can watch this at glennbeck.com, or if you're a subscriber to theblaze.com, but we'll post this chalkboard later. We did it yesterday on TV. This is a really important chalkboard, but it's our first one on this. This is probably something that you would not have seen on Fox. We would do these behind the scenes and then bring them to you, you know, over a three-day period. But this one, I think, is going to be so complex and last so long that I think we need to understand just the beginning of it. Now, what we know about this is there's this guy in Pakistan that was hired by a congressional guy. And who was it at first? It was Robert Wexler, a congressman, Democrat from Florida. And it was back in 2004, and he hired this Pakistani guy to come and do IT. We don't know anything about him. We don't know when he came into the country. We don't know what his background was. We don't know if he has any experience in IT. We know nothing. What we do know was that he was hired. We don't know for how much. He was hired, and then quickly, within a year, Wexler convinces Debbie Wasserman Schultz to also use him as her IT chief. And within that year, the average salary for an IT person for members of Congress is between $40,000 and $60,000. We do know that after a year of working there, he might have started at this, he was making $120,000. So he was making at least double what the average IT person would make on Capitol Hill, and for no reason that we know of. As soon as he is hired with by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, for some reason, Imran, the Pakistani guy, says, I need somebody else. So who does he hire? He hires Abid Awan. Now, Abid Awan is the brother of Imran. We don't know if he had any IT experience. We know nothing about it. But he is also hired and brought on at about $120,000 a year. Again, double the highest IT person in Congress. Next, within a year, Juan starts to grow his list of congressmen in the Democratic Party. And he says, wow, it is getting so big and so out of control. I need to be able to hire a couple of additional people. Okay. Are they IT people? You bet. My wife is one of them. And the other one is my best friend. Okay. Now they're both making over $120,000 a year. His wife has no IT experience. And his friend, his best friend, who is brought in, which is Rayo, what's his last name? Abbas. He goes from his very prestigious job of literally assembling the Big Macs at McDonald's to a $120,000 job as an IT person. So we're now at least talking about cronyism and nepotism, which is everything that the Democrats say they're against. But we have them at what? Hypocrisy? Oh, I'll alert the presses. So there's nothing really here except something strange. Now, about 2008, they start buying homes. And they start buying multiple homes in Virginia. Now, this is a group now, I think, four people. It will expand to four, five, six people by 2010. And these six people are making a total salary of $4 million doing IT for Congress. They're now making more than the best paid congressman of $168,000 a year by this time. And they start to buy all of this property in Virginia. Okay, they're doing well. They're going to invest. They're buying houses. Okay, so they all go out at the same time and they all buy houses through the Capital Credit Union, meaning the Bank of Congress approves these loans. They all go out at the same time and they start to buy houses. Then the next thing they do, and this is in 2009, they decide they're going to start what they call the CIA car dealership. The CIA car dealership. And I believe it, what was it? Central?
No, it's Cars no, International
Cars International A. Yeah, that's what it was.
Which is really weird. Right. Like Cars International seems like it could be normal, but right. Then they just put A at the end of it to make right. It CIA.
Right. So it's the CIA dealership. They're not really good at this whole dealership thing. What happens in 2009, as they buy the dealership, Abid's car is repossessed. So now he's in financial trouble. National security clearances. These guys would have to have national security clearance to be able to work for the IT department or be an IT department. The first time you have your car repossessed, you declare bankruptcy, you have some financial pressure. Your security clearance, if you're a low man on the totem pole, is immediately revoked because you are now a target for a foreign agent trying to put pressure on you. No questions are asked. Here is flare number one. No question. Sorry, flare number. I think McDonald's to the IT department might be flare number one. His car being repossessed, Congress does nothing. They do not look into his security clearance at all. No one questions it. Then in 2010, the CIA car dealership declares bankruptcy. Now it's bankruptcy for his business, and no one is questioned on their security clearance. Then a year later, Abid himself declares bankruptcy. Here's where it really gets interesting. He declares bankruptcy and immediately gets onto a plane and goes over to Beirut, where he meets with a guy who was one of the guys who was big in the lead up of the Iraqi war. They meet in Beirut. They just have a nice conversation, and we don't know what they talked about, but this guy is connected to Hezbollah. They meet in Beirut, and the guy's name is Dr. Al-Attar. He is an Iraqi politician linked to Hezbollah. They meet in Beirut, and the doctor says, "Man, I love, you know what's really clever? Cars International A. I think that's brilliant. I think you have something there. I want to invest in your company." So the company has just gone bankrupt. He goes over to Beirut, meets with a guy who has connections to Hezbollah, and the doctor writes him a check for $100,000. Now, if you've gone bankrupt with a car company, $100,000, I mean, first of all, you're in bankruptcy. You don't want a $100,000 investment. You're in bankruptcy. What are you doing? He's investing because he believes in, the Awan family. Nobody questions that. That raises no red flags. Then 2 years later, 1 year later, 2013, Hasib Rana joins the IT group. We don't have any idea if he had any IT experience. He's being paid an exorbitant salary. And then Imran's brother, Jamal, also joins the group. So now we have the Friends and Family program. And they are representing all kinds of Democrats and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Okay, so here's what happens. July, do you remember right before the Republican convention, WikiLeaks dumps all of this information. And it's all about the ins and outs and all these records about who? Republicans and Democrats and the DNC. Within days of that happening, here's what happens. The group decides we got to sell our house. We have to sell our houses right now. But they're not selling their house to outsiders. They're saying, you know, I bought my house for, I'm making these numbers up, $500,000. You know what it's worth now? $800,000. Oh my gosh, my brother. That sounds like a good deal. I'd like to buy your house for $800,000. Well, but you have another house. I know, but I'm selling my house, which was worth $500,000. Now I'm selling it for $800,000. Oh my gosh, my brother. You know what? Let me buy your house and you'll buy my house. What were they doing? They were inflating the prices of their house. They were then going back to the Capital Bank and saying, hey, we're going to sell our house to each other at these prices. We're going to get the loan for those prices. They're not really selling their house. They're taking the extra money and they're keeping that cash. So they immediately start to sell things immediately. And then there's a wire transfer to Pakistan. And it's Imran that makes this phone call to the bank, the Capital Bank in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol building, the credit union, says, I need to transfer $283,000. I'm sorry. Let me play this out. Burp. Capital Credit Union. Yes. This is the wife of Imran Iran, and we need $283,000 transferred to Pakistan for a funeral. What? For a funeral. And this is definitely not Imran. This is his wife. And I need $283,000. well, we can't transfer it for a funeral to Pakistan. We can't. That's oh, hang on. My husband just got home. Hello? Were you just talking to my wife? I tried to tell them. Yeah, it's not a funeral. It's we're buying property in Pakistan. The credit union says, oh, okay. He literally called as his wife tried to transfer money to Pakistan for one kick-ass funeral of $283,000 funeral. I don't know what they bury people in, but that's got to be nice.
Do you know what funeral potatoes are going for these days?
It's a lot.
A lot. They're okay. Expensive.
So he transfers that money to Pakistan. Immediately, the Capitol Police begin a criminal probe. This call happens in January. By March, the real wife, not this wife, but the real wife, gets onto a plane with the kids, goes to Pakistan. They're now under government protection of the government of Pakistan. She's there with God only knows how much money and the $283,000 that was transferred. Here's where, so far, all you have is something really weird going on. You have at least banking fraud.
Oh, yeah.
But there's probably so much more going on here, all the way up to espionage. We don't know. Could be blackmail. We do know this, that after she fled the country, Representative Ted Lieu from California, is that how you say his name? Is it Lieu? He's a Democrat. He had a bead as his IT guy. He's one of the only ones. He immediately fires a bead. Then what does he do? Then he gets on the phone and he calls the Secretary of Homeland Security. He calls John Kelly and says, John, I just want you to look into something with the IT servers. I think there's a problem, and I believe it will track all the way to Mar-a-Lago. I believe the president's communication is in jeopardy. Now, that's all we know. Do you think that's worth explaining to the American people? Do you think that's worth investigating? Why were the people in D.C. paying them so much money? Were they being blackmailed? They had access to all of their servers and all of their email. Do you think any congressman might have something that they just don't want out?
Do you think this warrants a little extra attention? I mean, hardly anyone is talking about
this.
No,
and they're not in Capitol Hill. They're trying to shove this under the rug. Yeah. Because wow. There are so many people involved, they're trying to shove this under the rug. This cannot be shoved under the rug. This has nothing to do with Democrats or Republicans. Has nothing to do with the DNC or let's get them. It has nothing to do with that. If the GOP were doing this, I'd be saying exactly the same thing. There's a problem here. There's a problem. And we need to figure it out now. We'll give you more on this story as it continues to develop. I want to tell you Don and Sandy's story. They tried to sell their property a few years ago. They didn't have any success, and the realtor was really difficult to work with and made the process, especially for Sandy, really stressful. This time, they decided to try something different. They went with realestateagentsitrust.com. They had a completely different experience. Ron, their real estate agent, met with them quickly within 2 days, had a photographer out taking pictures of their place. The property was listed. Few more days, they had an open house. Within a week, they had 10 offers. Realestateagentsitrust.com. They just sold their 2000th house. Just put the family in or out of their home. 2000 people have trusted this organization, Mercury Real Estate. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. We're going to help you find a great real estate agent in your town that will actually sell your house on time and for the most money, and will actually help you buy another house if that's what you desire in someplace else. in your town or wherever you're going. Unless you're going to Pakistan. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com right now. That's realestateagentsitrust.com and put a for sale, put a sold sign in your front yard.
The Glenn Beck Program.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So the one thing I did leave out, I just assumed everybody remembered, that Imran Iran is the guy, I can't never pronounce his name. He was arrested as he was trying to flee to Pakistan. Now, I can tie this together and give you conjecture on what I think happened. But I want to make sure that you have the facts and separate the facts from now my opinion. So tomorrow I'm going to come back to this chalkboard and we're going to explain. Those are the facts. That's what we know happened. Let me give you another chalkboard and start working out a few scenarios from best case scenario to worst case scenario. Even the best case scenario is very dangerous to our country and the Republic. Very dangerous. The best case scenario. That'll be tomorrow.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
I want to introduce you to Karen Vaughn. She is a mom of a U.S. Navy SEAL who was part of an operation. What was it? I want to say
the helicopter's call sign was Extortion 17.
Extortion 17. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was, and I'm like, it couldn't be extortion. Yeah. Extortion 17. If you have anything to do with Navy SEALs, military, you know Extortion 17 as one of the worst days in the history of SEALs. Right. More SEALs were lost in that one day than ever before. You want to talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah. It was the single largest loss of life in the history of naval special warfare. Single largest one-day loss of life in this entire war, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on that Saturday morning, unfortunately, we found out that our only son, our firstborn child, was part of that disaster. And it's been a life-altering experience. Those men were brave, fearless American warriors who were rushing into the battle to assist Army Rangers who had been in a gunfight for 3.5 hours. And their helicopter was shot down just before they touched down, killing every single person on board.
So you didn't know. I mean, there's a reason I had you on, and I'm doing an hour with you tonight on television. And I invite you to watch this because there's a reason I had Karen on. There's a lot of people that can tell these remarkable stories of heroism. I mean, the stories of heroism from the guys who survived and didn't survive, they're plentiful. They are plentiful, and they're stirring each one. But the reason why I wanted to have you on, Karen, is because of what you did with that experience is very different than just simply telling a story of a great hero. You chose a different path.
I did. You know, after Aaron's death, it's going to make me emotional to say this because you're kind of a rock star in our family. You were to Aaron. I want you to know that. He absolutely loved everything you did. And we did, too. And I have listened to you from day one.
Thank you.
But, you know, what I realized after Aaron died was he gave his life for me fighting a battle kinetically to protect and preserve the American way of life. Not a government, not a piece of land, but a way of life. And my husband and I have dedicated our lives to fighting culturally, as you do, to protect the same. We feel like it's the least we can do to spread the message across this country that America is worth fighting for, it's worth dying for, and that it's up to all of us inside the boundaries of this nation to protect and preserve in the interior of this nation what so many are giving their lives for, to protect and preserve from the exterior of the nation. And so it just became a calling on my life.
So it's amazing to me, Karen, that I'll speak to millennials and they don't, you know, it's hard for people my age to really come to grips with. They didn't know America prior to 9/11.
Right.
So they don't they don't know her real promise.
Right.
And so many rights are starting to just slip away. And, you know, I talk to people our age and I'll say the Western way of life is in real jeopardy. It's about to slide under into tyranny of some form. And people our age understand it.
Right.
Millennials don't really understand it.
Right.
Your son, you know, the book is called World Changer. And what you started to do was write a book for his children so they knew Dad.
Right.
But then you realized, wait a minute, this is actually a parenting book. Tell me about that.
It was an interesting thing because, as you said, I knew his babies were only 2 years old, not quite 2 years old, Reagan was, if that tells you anything about my son's politics, and Chamberlain, who was only 9 weeks old when Aaron left this earth. So
that's funny.
You understand, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I wanted them to be able to pick up stories of their father's childhood in every stage that they would go through. You know, their dad's not here to tell them what it was like when he was 10 or what it was like when he was 14 or when he learned to drive. So I wanted them to be able to know their dad's story. And that's how it started.
Gosh,
and
then, how hard was then, just that going through the scrapbook of your mind?
Yeah, that's it. And it was a gut-wrenching experience. It actually took a long time because I continuously had to put it down because I was just emotionally overdone. Well, then I was just out of the blue. A friend of mine asked me to speak to a mom's group down in South Florida, not far from my home. And she said, I want you to teach people how to raise a world changer like your son. And I was like, wow, I don't think I did that. I thought God did that, you know, because Aaron was a devout believer. He loved Jesus. You know, I mean, his whole life revolved around his faith in God. And so I just always saw that it was something God did. And then when I started just evaluating basic principles of parenting and started talking to moms about this, I realized that this culture did not have those foundational tools that Glenn, you and I had growing up or raising our families. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, I did do something. It didn't seem fantastic to me or extraordinary to me, but in today's culture,
it is.
They're extraordinary tools.
It is.
And so I just sort of thought, wow, I'll go back through these stories and I will weave the teaching principles into every single story. And that's what I did. And then my oldest daughter and I wrote 18 tiny chapters in the back of a study guide where moms could sit down together in groups or even dads and go through principles of how to raise strong, formidable kids who don't need safe spaces on college campuses, kids that are willing to run in the direction of whatever it is God calls them to do with their life instead of running away from it in fear or cowardice, just kids who can take what life deals them, you know? And it was quite a project working with one of my children to write a book about parenting.
I bet.
It was kind of funny, you know, but we had to go away and butted our minds together and just said, what did I do right? What did, you know, my husband and I, not me, but Billy and I, what did we do right, Tara? What did we do wrong? You know? And so we put all those principles in the back and just
What was the biggest thing that you get to now and say, had no idea, but wow, were we lucky we did this and people should do this?
The first thing that comes to my mind is, as a mom, wow, was I lucky that I caved to the concept that my husband wanted to raise a man? It's that simple. You know, in our society, I believe one of the biggest breakdowns in our home right now is this role reversal and this constant striving of women to believe that they have to be everything that I know this sounds, it's just such a broad thing, and I know it needs to be a little more narrow than this, but there's a lot to talk about here in our culture, you know, where we are constantly telling men, you have to be more like women. You have to be more like women to fit into this society. And, you know, I was married to a rugged farm boy who had no intention of conforming our son to my, you know, and I say in the book, like, I tried to fight that every way I knew. I was a 19-year-old mom, Glenn, when Aaron was born. And so I tried to fight it every way I could. I entered him in the Troy Tiny Top Beauty Review and he won it, but he never forgave me for it.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Billy was constantly busy teaching Aaron that he could overcome unimaginable obstacles that seemed too huge for him. He'd have him out there helping him cut trees on our farm, helping him give birth to calves, you know, you know, things like that. And I tell a story about White Cow, this cow who literally terrorized our children on our cattle farm in Tennessee. And this cow, Aaron was terrified of this cow. He wouldn't walk out in the pasture with it. And Billy one day, instead of letting Aaron cower in fear to this cow, he said, I'm going to tell you what, you're going to stand at the fence right now. And when White Cow, I'm going to herd the cows in. And when White Cow confronts you, if she charges you, son, you got to punch her in the nose. I'm sitting there thinking, Aaron weighed like 60 pounds soaking wet. You know, he's about 10 years old, I think. And I was like, you're going to do well, you know, but he let Aaron do it. I stood back and let him do it. And Aaron did. White Cow, sure enough, charged Aaron that day. And he reared back in a nerve-defying, you know, like a nerve-wracking defiance and just punched that heifer in the nose. Well, you know what he learned that day? And White Cow, you know, she snorted and snarled at him and took a step back like she couldn't believe what happened. But then in submission, she went in the pen. And Aaron learned that day that there was no challenge too great for him. And it's what drove him to become not only a Navy SEAL, but all the way to the pinnacle at SEAL Team 6. Those are the things. And I say the greatest principle I can teach any mom is let your husband raise a man. It's hard not to interfere, but let him raise a man.
I was always afraid to have a son because I didn't have a dad that did any of the typical dad stuff and had a hard relationship with my dad for a long time. And so I was terrified of raising a son. And I have three girls.
Yeah.
And I do not know how to raise girls. I am horrible at raising girls. I don't know how many times my wife will look at me like, what the hell is wrong with you? What are you saying? I'm like, what? What? Yes, the skirt makes her look fat. No, what are you doing, you imbecile? So, but I see it with my wife, with my son. Men speak the language of a boy, women speak the language of a girl, and if you don't honor that language and honor that there is a difference there, your kids will be lost. They'll just be lost.
You're right.
What was the thing that you found out that you did wrong?
Well, that's a hard question. No one's ever asked me to evaluate that, Glenn. Wow. You know, gosh, I'm not like I'm flawless, you know, but if I tried to single out one thing, I don't know. Maybe it was that I resisted things for so long, you know, that I tried so hard to resist. It's speaking specifically about Aaron, you know, not with our daughters, but maybe that I tried to resist so much that forging that a man has to do with his son if a boy's going to turn out right. I did resist it for a long time. And like I said, I'm thankful that I caved. But that's the first thing that comes to my mind is I really did try to resist that. And if I could just speak to women out there who are raising boys, stop resisting it. Let your husband have that role in his son's life and let him be to him what he needs to be, you know, and stop trying to turn both of them into women.
As you see the world and where we're headed, and where we're headed, I think, with war, where we're headed culturally, where Europe and everything is headed, and the lack of leadership and how do you feel about your son's sacrifice?
That's hard. It's really hard. I'm not trying to plug our organization. We have an organization where we mentor kids whose fathers have died during this war. Not long ago, we had about 30 kids sitting in front of my husband as he was, you know, closing out the camp, and their moms, the widows, were behind them. And my husband said to those little kids, he said, I want you to know your fathers didn't die for a government. Like I said earlier, they didn't die to seize anybody's land. They died for an American way of life, or for a way of life, the American way of life. And Glenn, we are watching that slip through our fingers. And I feel like every day I have an obligation to honor the sacrifice that not only Aaron has made for me, but so many others throughout history. And I feel a compelling desire to reach into the homes right now and say, we got to shake this loose and shake this up and understand what we've given up, where we are today, and where we need to go in the future before it's too late. And you will never convince me it's too late, because that means Aaron died for nothing. and you will never convince me of that. He died for the American way of life, and I'll fight to reinstill those values in American culture with my last breath.
It will not be men who save the earth. It will not be women who save the earth, but I am convinced it will be mothers and fathers that save us from ourselves. One last question. What is the thing your son taught you?
That's easy. How to be strong. Aaron's death didn't make me weak. It made me strong. It really did, because I started employing the principles in my life that he employed in his. Aaron never took a break. He never said, I'm too tired to go fight the fight. He never said that. And so, you know, my life has taken this crazy turn in the past. We're coming up this Sunday as the 6-year anniversary of his death. And I've lived a very different life than I lived before Aaron died. And many times along the way, I've thought, you know, I'm too tired. I'm too old. I'm too weak. I'm too frail. I'm too this. I'm too that. And every time it's just his voice whispering in my ear. Aaron was an encourager. You can do this, Mom. Just keep walking.
I want to let you know that I believe there is something on the horizon that is very important that I just feel is coming. And that is a movement of moms unlike we have seen before. And I wanted Karen to be on TV tonight to spend an hour with you and with moms and talk about changing the world just by raising good children. If you're struggling and you would like some help or you want to know how to spread, join tonight at theblaze.com/TV at 5:00. The name of the book is World Changer, A Mother's Story, The Unbreakable Spirit of U.S. Navy SEAL Aaron Carson Vaughn, by Karen Vaughn, his mom. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Back in just a second. First, let me tell you about the USCCA. The USCCA is knows that if you have a concealed carry permit, you are a target. And I don't mean by the bad guys you're going to run on the street. You're a target by the bad guys that wear suits and carry briefcases. Listen to this story. Vegas woman, she's viciously beaten by her boyfriend. She runs, she starts to flee. He follows her. And a bystander intervenes, shoots him. This saves her life. Cops show up. The guy with the gun's arrested. This is what happened. This is what happens every time you discharge your weapon. You are going to spend 3 years of hell in a courtroom. Who's going to pay for it? The USCCA will help. Just go to protectanddefend.com. This is what they do. Protect the protectors. USCCA, protectanddefend.com. Protectanddefend.com. Go there now.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you for giving us the benefit of the doubt and your hard-earned time. We know time is the most valuable commodity that you possess and we all possess. Thank you for sharing it with us. We hope we've given you something of use today. Spread the word on Karen Vaughn. She's going to be on tonight. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation about parenting in this particular climate. How do we do it and raise great children? Tonight, Blaze
this
TV.
Is- The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.